Welcome to More to the Story, a podcast from the ministry of Spring Hill Baptist Church in Mobile, Alabama. Spring Hill Baptist Church exists to lead people to become fully devoted followers of Jesus Christ, and this podcast is designed to help achieve that by providing thoughtful reflection on the Bible, theology, cultural issues, and current events from a Christian worldview. I'm your host, Ben Stubblefield, senior pastor of Spring Hill Baptist Church, and I'd like to thank you for joining us on Episode 7 of More to the Story. Episode 7, hard to believe. We've done 7 episodes. If you've listened to all 7, man, you deserve a sticker. And I hope it's been helpful for you. And hey, if you have thoughts or ideas or questions that you'd like me to address on More to the Story, feel free to comment on Spring Hill Baptist Church's Facebook page. Feel free to comment in some of the podcast notes below or reach out to us by phone if that'd be helpful. And we'd love to address or help you in any other way. Sometimes it's helpful to hear back from listeners. You may have good ideas on ways we can make the show more productive for you. So on episode 7, I want to just break a little bit from what we typically do as I kind of review some of the content of the sermon that I've preached the week prior. But I want to talk about one of the what I would think is more of a theological issue, a cultural, maybe even a cultural issue, to a certain extent, and I want to talk about Matthew chapter 16, verse 18, famous passage in which Jesus says, "I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overpower it. I will build my church, and the gates of hell," some translations say, "will not prevail against it." Peter Berger, who's a famous sociologist, did a study of international religions, and really with a focus on which nation would we describe as the most religious nation and which nation would we describe as the least religious nation. And he concluded that the nation of India is the most religious nation. It has a political religion, and there's a high willingness among the population there to participate in religious festivals and holidays and traditions and so forth. So India, the most religious nation. And then he decided that Sweden could be labeled the least religious nation, or we might say the most secularized nation. So the least likely to participate in religious traditions, festivals, holidays, and things of that nature. So, okay, India the most religious, Sweden the least religious. So someone famously asked him, well, what is America? And he said, well, America is a nation of Indians governed by a small number of Swedes. It's a religious nation by and large, but its political leadership is largely secular. Now, if you're listening to this, you probably could have concluded that on your own. It is an interesting time. We live in a moment, I think, of great political secularism. And this has brought about, for a lot of Christians, I think, in general, a sadness about the state of affairs. I hear this a lot. I'm a pastor. We have all age groups in our church, but I hear it a lot from people who kind of have a long memory of the state of affairs, and they can remember a different time, a different generation, when the public life and the public political life even sort of was a mirror of a Judeo-Christian worldview and ethic. So you go to church, you go to school, you get involved in politics, city board, school board, and you kind of all had a common ground, a common morality and common understanding of where the world, how the world got here and where the world, what the world should be and where the world is headed. And so there was a kind of a common ground among all people about what was right and wrong in the world. But that's not real anymore, is it? There's kind of a shift, different realities, competing worldviews. And you really kind of see this on display in the halls of Congress and legislature, because people from different parts of the country represent different political and religious and moral or secular and immoral worldviews. And we see it on display. And some people see the votes and legislatures, Supreme Court decisions. Some people view those as signs of the time. And a lot of people are pessimistic. A lot of Christian folks kind of live in a state of pessimism. That's been my experience. Is I've met a lot of people who see the world as and the country as going down the tubes. That this is the 21st century is a harbinger of terrible things coming. And really, some people, quite frankly, are just depressed about the state of affairs, and I find this even among Christian folks. They're very worried about the future, very pessimistic about the future, despairing about the state of the world. Jesus says, though, doesn't he, brothers and sisters? Matthew chapter 16, verse 18. Hey, I am building my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Jesus promises us that the long arc of history is bent towards glory. It's bent towards Christ. And we know the end of the story. Jesus rose from the dead. He ascended into heaven. He left us a promise, and he is coming again in ways that will, I think, even surprise some of us who are living today in the West and seeing some of the the statistics of how Christianity or real religion is on the decline. Jesus says, in the end, there's going to be so many people in glory, you're not going to be able to count them. It's innumerable. He says in the book of Revelation, people from every tongue, tribe, nation, and too many to count. Jesus is doing a work, even if it's hard for us to see what's happening. Jesus is building his church with the promise also that the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. The forces of darkness, evil, and the principalities and powers armed against the Lord will not prevail. Jesus always wins. He has defeated death, brought about the death of death. He has disarmed the devil, and he is operating in his spirit by his power in the world to bring people into redemption and glory. And he is promising in his power a new heavens and new earth in which the Lord with his people will reign forever and ever. The long trajectory of history will be is bent towards Christ, and Colossians says is aimed at all things being summed up in him. Why? Why do we believe that? Because it's not some raw optimism. We're just not putting on happy faces. We're not just make-believing things are going to be okay. No. We know it's true because there is an actual empty tomb. Our faith is based in fact. We're not just hope. We're not just like making a story up so to make ourselves feel better when we go to bed at night. No, it's based in reality. There is an actual physical body that used to be dead, and in the power of God is risen from the dead. And that resurrection authenticates, legitimizes, authorizes Jesus Christ to exercise all his holy will and all his righteous authority over heaven and earth. And it seals all his promises as true. Jesus, if he can defeat death, he can do anything. And he has promised us that he is coming again to make all things right. He's bringing people in from all over the globe. And this church of his is going to be so great, powerful, and big that we can't even take a proper census because it's too many to number. The Gospels describe the ministry of the kingdom this way. It's like a mustard seed. It's small when it begins. But what happens? Over time, it becomes this surprising, gigantic tree. The image of the parable is that it's so big that the birds of the air make their home in it. It provides shade. It's huge. It's unexpectedly and surprisingly big. The same parable is used about leaven in the dough. Just a little bit of leaven, but when it's worked through, it leavens the whole lump, just like the gospel, just like the church. It begins small. It begins with a little no-name man named Jesus from Nazareth and 12 disciples. And it explodes in Acts chapter 2 to begin covering the surface of the world, to spread to all four corners of the world. Jesus, similar parable of the soils, right? If the gospel seed falls, the word of God falls on good soil, what happens? It yields unbelievably productive fruit, some 30, some 60, some 100-fold. That's astonishing. No plant can do that. But the gospel of God, the power of the gospel, and the power of the church extends beyond our wildest imaginations. And even though it may seem grim at some time, brothers and sisters, God is accomplishing all his holy will. Therefore, he says, rejoice in the Lord. How often? We rejoice in the Lord always. And again, Paul says, I say rejoice. Not just because we're being blindly and foolishly optimistic, because we know that the resurrected Messiah will accomplish all his promises to us. It is a sure and certain fact. So, yeah, maybe in the political spectrum is not as awesome as we would hope it would be. Yeah, maybe there is a challenge ahead of us to be to reach the next generation that maybe the generation before us didn't have. Yeah, maybe there are some difficulties in our churches, and maybe things we can remember a time when maybe things were easier or better, or there was more money or more people or whatever, more children. Yeah, maybe that's true. Maybe not. Maybe you're in a church that's very young, and you see all things great and all things happy, and so you don't share the same sense of challenge, but you will. In time, you will. You'll see. There are things that happen, and things are challenges for us. And so this word I want to give to you is for all of us. It's for all of us. That to remember that no matter how difficult today may be for us, and to remember no matter how challenging the moment may be for us as a culture, and no matter how challenging it may be for us as a body politic, that Christ is building his church. And no power of man and no scheme of hell can prevail against him. I want to encourage you, in a time when there is a changing moral landscape and a changing religious landscape, I want to encourage you and to energize you to be involved. If you see what's going on in our culture around us, now is the time to double down, to be evangelist, to be aggressive, to get involved in our political life as a country and as a citizen. Now is the time that we as Christians must engage thoroughly and aggressively in discipleship and evangelism and the training of our children, the raising up the next generation to know and fear the Lord. But I want you to do it not in a way that worries. I want you to do it not in a way that's depressed. And I want you to do it not in a way that's discouraged and despairing. No, be encouraged. Rejoice, for our Lord is King. And He reigns perfectly and righteously over a world, over heaven and earth. And He is seeing His church through to the end. He is moving us in a long sweep of history towards glory. And it's going to be good. For the one who has died for us and who has laid down His life for us, lives for us, and is empowering us by His Spirit to accomplish all His holy will. Well, thank you for listening to this episode 7 of More to the Story. For more episodes delivered directly to you on a regular basis, I want to make sure that you subscribe to the podcast. And for more information about Spring Hill Baptist Church, you can look us up online at shbc.cc. Again, that's shbc.cc. Well, I'm Pastor Ben. I want to thank you for listening in, and I do look forward to being with you again on the next episode of More to the Story.